That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Chaz Smith, welcome back to The Grit for October 27th, 2017.
What a day. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Back in our home studio, the Surfrider Foundation in San Clemente, California. Surfrider.org is their website. Should people support them, Chaz?
They definitely should.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why wouldn't you? Even though I really went on a very thin limb and said that they were responsible for the burying of nuclear waste in San Clemente.
Did you write a story about that?
I did, of course.
I missed that.
That was, yeah, it was awesome. It was right. It was like weeks before we did our first one here.
Oh.
Yeah, but I will say, so I wrote a story about basically that Surf Rider was turning a blind eye to the nuclear pit in their own backyard, and we're not doing enough about it. And I wrote the story, put it up on Beach Grit, and got like a good 4 or 5 emails from Surf Rider. That were the kindest, most wonderful, like, hey, totally get your perspective. Let us show you what we're doing and talk me through every point where I was wrong. It was like the model of how to engage with a nasty journalist, I guess, because they were totally right. I was wrong. I had gone off half cocked like I normally do. It was great. It was a great exchange. Plus, then I got to do another story about, okay, you know, this is the perception of Surf Rider not being involved, but this is the reality. And yeah.
Could you imagine how many emails or bad things, I mean, just with social media alone, Surf Rider gets from little people, not little people, but people around the world and in their small community, something bad is happening and they don't know how to handle it. And so they just take to social media and go, Surf Rider, why aren't you here cleaning up the oil on our beaches?
100%. I mean, that's what I did. I was exactly that person, right? It was like from a certain perspective, and I had had some sources tell me that, you know, Surf Rider was not involved in the nuclear issue and even, you know, making it so that they could bury it in the sand or something. They were wrong. I was wrong. But the way Surf Rider handled it, if I had been Surf Rider, I would have popped off at me viciously and said, you are a naughty man.
They've been in the game a long time, so maybe they used to and they've learned from their mistakes. But it's kind of like if you're running an organization, you have a limited amount of resources. They can only be devoted. So you have to prioritize where things go. And then, so I think they've done a great job, though, of creating chapters around the world to be responsible for their little region and all that sort of stuff. But I'm glad to hear your contrition in that matter
is contrite. I was contrite.
Dude, you are kind of a changed man, I would say. In the time that I've known you, you've softened in ways that I am surprised by.
No, I am always – I love to go to battle. Here's the thing. I love to go to battle, but I love more to be proved wrong. That's the real truth is
– good. Okay.
Like if someone – you know, I rarely – the only hills I'll die on is the wave pool hill and yeah, maybe that's it.
Okay. Well, you and I had a conversation off the air that we can reveal later – on this show, but yeah, it's kind of what prompted me to think that you're softening up, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I love to be a changed man.
I wanted, when I take to Instagram to advertise this episode, here's how I'm going to pitch it, all right?
Yep.
Today's episode is engineered with auditory sensitization systems with hollow fiber ear canal mapping designed to enhance intercochlear stimulation. Don't miss it.
That's amazing.
You're
going to get a job straight away at Rip Curl.
Thank you.
I think.
I appreciate
that one.
I just realized I do not try hard enough to market anything that I do. After that wetsuit conversation, it's like, these guys, it doesn't really take that much effort, but...
It takes some.
Yeah. That I'm not putting in, and I could easily ramp up my marketing efforts. So there you go.
Speaking of wetsuit marketing, real quick, just very quickly. I really loved Rip Curl's ads during the... Portuguese webcast, mm-hmm. the one with Mick and whatever. It actually made it was like a well done campaign, I thought, because the wetsuits all looked like really essential. You know, it was like cold water stuff, but everybody looked like they were having a ton of fun in mm-hmm. their wetsuits. It was one of the few ad campaign or like
I'm on board. The one thing that's hilarious to me about that is at the end when they show the logo,
Mick's dumb voice saying,
"I thought it was
Rip Curl."
I thought it was Mason.
Is it Mason being Mick?
Because
it's an Australian accent.
Is it?
It might be Mason mocking. If it's Mason mocking Mick, then maybe it's funnier.
Yeah.
But I think it's just Mick. It's just Rip Curl.
Well, what's funny is it's obviously not like they brought him into a studio and had him record a bunch of different versions of him saying Rip Curl. They just they took that audio out of some video that they had where he's having a conversation with somebody and he mentions Rip Curl in the conversation because you could hear it's part of a sentence or something.
Did you and I talk about that other creature? Was it Creatures of Leisure?
No, we didn't talk about it.
The other one, it didn't air during this contest. It must've been two contests ago. And Mick Fanning he was somehow part of it. It must've been Creatures of Leisure, but I don't, but Mick Fanning was Mick Fanning was involved and the budget was it was well shot and whatever, but they literally did Mick's interview it must've been on a speakerphone with Mick calling in from somewhere and delivering it with the speakerphone thing. And they just ran it like, oh, nobody will notice.
Right.
You can't tell that it's like all echoey and hollow and Mick sounds like he's on a crappy iPhone.
It's so funny. The Rip Curl thing, there's no voices in the whole commercial.
No,
and then at the end, you just hear somebody go, Rip Curl.
Yeah.
Like real quick, like smashed in.
I'm going to go back and listen and see if it's Mick, if it's Mason, if it's Mason being Mick, or if it's some maybe third or fourth.
Just some random dude in the factory.
Just a Rip Curl.
The other thing, so speaking, the reason why I brought that wetsuit thing up is we had True Wetsuits reach out and offer to throw us each a wetsuit to test out this winter and give feedback on. So shout out to them,
True Wetsuits, and I'm excited to test it out.
Did you get yours yet?
No, I'm gonna go by either today or Monday to pick it up. But what I'm excited about is so that Rip Curl ad made me think. Okay, Rip Curl's really, you know, everybody looks like they're having fun in their wetsuits and whatever the price is on those, I'm sure is double probably what True sells there for. And True is in the, you know, wonder. I mean, I was thinking about how lucky we are in our lifetime to have this industry come up of the affordable wetsuit, I guess.
Totally.
Like the wetsuit without the bells and whistles, at least as far as advertising goes. But so, you know, we have True, we have... I think there's Independent Wetsuit Company is one or something. Independent Surf Company. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
There's that one. There's that one in Australia that you ride, right?
Need.
Exactly. Yeah. And I feel there's a handful more.
Yeah.
That offer a price point wetsuit. So what I'm going to do here, is take that True wetsuit and then I'm going to go buy, I think, one of Rip Curl's off the racks, like one of their nice expensive ones and see what the difference is. Because that's the real question here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, we talked about it last time about doing a test of wetsuits, but really what the True test is this tier of wetsuits, the cost effective tier versus the top tier.
Like,
and are these wetsuits, so is True as good as Rip Curl's $350 offer?
Flash bomb.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's the question.
Well, for me, the question's already been answered. I encourage you to do it, and I'll support you, and let's devote time to it on the show. For me, the question's already been answered. As somebody who's been buying wetsuits, obviously, as you have for my entire life, each year they get better.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that we can always count on. But also each year, each brand, it's the same across the board. Like Rip Curl's best is equivalent to O'Neill's best.
See, do you, but that's
with a little bit of exception.
See, and that's, but I don't know that to be true because I only ride one wetsuit a season, right? Like if I had an O'Neill and a Rip Curl, then I feel like I could speak to that, but I feel I can't because maybe that year O'Neill's wetsuit was, you know, 50% warmer and 25% stretchier. And I would have no idea, right? Because I didn't ride, like all I did was ride my Rip Curl.
I've had various wetsuits in the same year.
In the same season.
In the same season. But not every year throughout. I certainly didn't have all four brands throughout, you know, but there's been times where I have one of each. And I've always just seen the general bar get raised higher and the general, and everybody just competes with one another with the same materials, calling it something different. Until Patagonia came along, and then they did something like radically different.
Have you ever ridden a Patagonia?
Yeah, so I bought one. When they came along, I think like 2 or 3 years after the initial launch, I bought one. So it went down from like $700 to like $400, which was still a lot of money.
Don't they not even, I mean, how do you know what you're supposed to buy? Don't they not use like 3.2, 4.3 kind of, I mean, they have like a full different system?
I think you're right. It's like R2, R3. But I got which might actually just be, it's like all 3 millimeter. I think maybe there's no 2 millimeter panels, but I didn't like it. It was like heavier and it was not as flexible. And, so I got away from it. And then now with, you know, I think I had a Matus and it's like, that was different because it was the Japanese neoprene. So there is probably a little more variation now. So maybe your test will actually,
I mean, that's, to me, that's the test though, is a, you know, 150 or 200, what is a price point of the cheaper wetsuit?
200 is fair, okay. Right under 200.
So is a $200 wetsuit as good as a $350 wetsuit?
Right.
That's the real test, right?
My answer is going to be yes. I would assume the answer is yes. My hypothesis. So?
We'll see though.
Yeah.
I'm going to go test it out. I'm going to go waste $350 on a Rip Curl wetsuit to see.
The reason why I think it is because talking to the guys at Need or whomever, like their thing is like, hey, we're using the exact same material. These are made in the exact same factory.
Sure.
The only difference is there's no retailer and there's like they're sold direct and there's no bells and whistles, as you call them, in terms of like hang tags, color, bunch of different colors that we need to stock, you know, logos printed, all that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, I'm going to go see.
All right, cool. Well, the other thing that we have to get into is we had a listener chime in on the proper pronunciation of a German word.
You were right.
Well, I was partially wrong too. Here's his explanation.
Zeitgeist. That is the correct German pronunciation. Zeitgeist. The way I usually hear people say it here in the US is Zeitgeist. But try and go for a little bit harder Z, like a TS. Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist. It's funny.
Zeitgeist.
When he says Zeitgeist, I'm like, that sounds exactly how I say it.
Zeitgeist.
But I guess, like he said, the first.
Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist.
Yeah. I was totally wrong, though, with the geist.
Yeah, but, I mean. I mean, who knows? I've heard it said that way, too. You know what I mean? Zeitgeist. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
It's good. Thank you.
Yeah, so listeners chiming in, dude. The other thing that people chimed in on were, we were unsure if Hayden Shapes Hypto-Cryptos were actually a Kuchen Curran.
A lot of people have them.
Dude, a lot of intermediate rippers.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm, I mean, yeah, a lot of intermediate rippers have them. Yeah.
So it's not a Kuchen Curran.
Nope, it's a legitimate, normal surfboard.
There you go.
Yep.
The science is in.
Yep.
A bunch of people sent photographic evidence and videos, actually, of themselves, and it's like, well, that guy's ripping.
And it's, so. There was no denying that a good quality of, upper intermediate surfers ride Hypto-Cryptos.
Yep. So that's getting knocked off the Kuchen Curran list. Is there anything, before we move into like the meat and potatoes of the show, is there anything you want to add to the asymmetrical conversation?
I mean, to be honest, it's the only board I've been surfing.
Is it?
I had to give it up. Yeah, I have not gotten off it. I actually got a Super Brand Siamese Twin, so that's a lie. And I went out and had a super fun day on that. But I only went out on the Siamese Twin, which is like, have you seen those?
No,
I've interesting. They have like the bottom or the paneling or whatever. What's it called on the bottom? The
contour?
It's not the contour. It's
concave?
No, it's got like ridges.
Like little wings or channels?
Channels. Sorry, yeah, okay. Channels. Like it's got a bunch of channels kind of on the tail, and then it's just a standard 20 though.
Hmm.
But, you know, I've had a great fun day on that. But, yeah, I can't. I'm addicted to asymmetricals. Derek and I completely disagree. I'm excited for Derek Riley, my partner at Beach Grit, to come out. He's coming out in a couple days. And, yeah, I'm excited to go blow to blow on, because I'm completely sold at this point on asymmetricals. And to be honest, I don't see getting away from them. I can't imagine going back to a normal, a standard symmetrical shortboard at this point.
Well, Derek posted an article, a conversation he had with Matt Biolis about them. And I thought Matt did a good job of answering a question that you were asking, which is like, look, if it is definitively better, why isn't everyone riding them? Yeah. Why, or certainly at the top level of the pro world, why aren't they riding them? And Matt did a great job explaining that. He was just like, dude, there's too many moving parts. How do you stock models in retailers? How do you, you know, there's a lot more customization here. So you can't mechanize the system.
Sure.
The manufacturing system.
What I'm curious about, because Biola said in that article too, like a lot of them got too extreme in their shapes. And so which, you know, dinged functionality, I think was what Matt was saying. The ones at Album that I've been writing, or the one from Album that I've been writing, sure, it's like strangely shaped, but not too crazy. I mean, I don't know. It seems like Matt Parker from Album. I need to write more.
But he's found kind of a subtle version.
It felt to me like I absolutely loved it. It made surfing, surfing's always fun, but I have not had that much fun surfing. I rode it for a month, and especially the last couple weeks, the waves have actually been good.
Yeah.
And so going out on good waves and just, it's incredible.
Dude, by the way, the waves have been pumping.
It's been fun.
Have you been surfing?
I've been surfing a bunch.
Good. I haven't been that surfed out in a long time.
Yeah,
to the point of like the other day, I mean, it's still good now, but the last couple of days I just took off completely because I'm like, dude, I'm satiated.
Yeah.
I'm so exhausted. I'm satiated. I actually, the last couple of sessions, I wasn't even surfing that well. I was going out of obligation.
Yep.
And it's a wonderful place to get to.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's been better up here, I think, or in Orange County than it has been in North County, San Diego. A lot better. But it's still been, you know, fun. A lot of fun days down there.
Dude, I've had multiple days all day long, like 2-3 session days, A-frame, head high, beach breaks with nobody around.
Yeah.
Because it's that good everywhere. It's like I go pick a peek down the beach and it's still firing.
Where have you been going?
Lesser known spots right off PCH.
Okay.
You know? But like the pier in 54th Street at Newport's pumping. So like everybody goes there.
Yeah.
And then right down the beach, it's empty and perfect.
I love that. I love when we get swell.
It's weird that it's like Surf City, USA, along PCH, that you could see the waves from the beach or from the road, and it's still empty.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yep.
So, well, good. I'm glad to hear you've been surfing. We have a new board, a new asymmetrical coming from Scrivy again. Obviously, I told you about that other one that I test rode, just like not enough volume in it. He said, hey, I've got another one in the works. I'll send that down, send the other one back. So that should be arriving on Tuesday.
I'm excited to try another one.
Board Porn posted a photo of it if you want to see that.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, dude, turmoil in the surf media.
A lot of turmoil. It's been the surf media wars have broken out into the wide open.
It's so good.
That's why I feel, you know, I'm gonna pat my own back here. I feel like I drug everyone down to the gutter.
I think you did, for sure.
I feel I was responsible for dragging all of surf media straight into the gutter. But ain't it funnier in the gutter? I mean, maybe it's more myopic, but I think everyone's having a better time.
I certainly am. I'm confused by a lot of it. I'm confused that people care.
The people in the surf media care, or the people outside of the surf media care?
Both. I think, firstly, I'm confused people in surf media get their feelings hurt.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
awesome.
Actually take it seriously.
That is brilliant.
It really is.
But if they didn't, then I think, I wouldn't be, you know, poking so much. If nobody cared, then it wouldn't be fun to...
Well, let's get into it.
Yeah.
What's happened between Stab and the Inertia? Should we start there?
Sure.
Okay, what happened?
So Stab writer Brendan Buckley, I don't know if he's on staff there or if he's just a drop-in, but I worked with Brendan at Surfing. He was there. Yeah, Brendan's awesome. He's a talented rider, ripping surfer, very, very funny man. He basically posed as a contributor for the Inertia, submitted a story that had no scientific backing, that dolphin brains are this or fire the same as surfer brains or something. When dolphins catch waves, their frontal lobes fire in the same way that surfers. The Inertia posted it. Stab or Brendan wrote a story for Stab, like, haha, look what I did to the Inertia. And then Zach Weisberg, the Inertia founder in chief, responded with a lengthy letter about a funeral he was going to and how sad he was and how hurt he was that their lovers up in Venice, California did that to them.
And basically said, like, hey, you guys are these bullies in the back of the bus constantly making fun of us. We just love surfing and we just want to keep the good vibes going. Why are you constantly poking fun at us and now like poking holes in our business model or whatever it was?
Yeah.
What'd you think of, well, first of all, I should state for maybe listeners who don't know, the Inertia is all user submitted content. So you can just go on, fill out a form on their website, submit an article, and the next day it's posted, like the Huffington Post or something.
Yeah.
So, I was shocked. And so when Zach wrote his response to Stab, I was shocked that he even said, like, oh, we're going to put in safeguards now and really kind of change what the way that we're doing what we're doing to protect from these things happening. I was like, dude, why? If that's what you do, just own it. We all know what you do.
Totally. Well, and just I mean, you can have a disclaimer, I guess, if you want. Like, hey, don't take this, you know, not everything on this site is vetted scientifically. I mean, that's not their job, right? That's user submitted.
Nor did anybody think that it was.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, there was no confusion to me that any of their articles were ever based in truth or journalism or anything like that.
No, like, no.
Or science.
Totally. So, I mean, I've read such, you know, absolute garbage, both literary garbage, but also like dubious science on there all the time. Like, as much or more than dolphins' brains and surfers being the same.
So, hilarious, first of all, that Stab did that.
Yeah,
I think it's very funny.
Sure.
I have no problems with that at all.
No.
I didn't really even think it was that much of a story. Like, Stab even writing about it, it's like, oh, well, yeah, that's kind of funny, but like, I'm not surprised because we all know what the Inertia
sure.
is.
And well, and Stab had a real like backpedally thing at the end of it. Like, editor's note, we normally don't make fun of our, you know, competition. Like, I mean, to me, Stab and the Inertia have become more or less the same thing. I feel that they're, you know, both up in Venice. They're like, I genuinely feel
that Venice adjacent.
Venice adjacent. Yeah. No, neither of them are in Venice. Sorry. Both are Venice adjacent. But I feel they're pushing out the same or very similar content and very similar kind of perspectives. So it was funny. That was the funny part to me is these, like, it was like a husband and wife fighting is how it felt.
I kind of agree with you. What was your thoughts on Zach's letter?
Oh, I mean, Zach is like the model of passive aggression. And somebody had said in, had commented on Beach Crit just about the levels of kind of neurotic passive aggression in that thing. Like, starting off by saying, you know, the first line of it was, I was made aware that we had been punked by Stab basically when I was coming home from a funeral of a very loved family member.
Right.
That's how it started. And so if you're going to play the funeral card in the first sentence, and it was literally in the first sentence that he wrote about coming home from a funeral of a dearly beloved. It wasn't just a family member. It was a dearly beloved family member. And then go on like a, just the most passive aggressive screed of like, I don't care. I don't give a fuck. But then clearly being so obviously wounded by, you know, what was really a totally victimless prank.
Totally.
I mean, that is the Inertia. That's the kind of stuff they do. They do articles all the time about dolphin brains and stuff. And who cares if this one wasn't scientifically vetted? Anybody who went and actually believed, again, like you said, if you believe that the Inertia is your one-stop shop for proper science, then you got other problems.
It's not even the most scientifically fraudulent article that's on the Inertia. You know what I mean? It's like, why do you even care that they pull the fast one on you when you guys publish stuff all the time that's even worse than this or more unbelievable? Really, so really? I was confused that Zach even cared.
I mean,
I mean, he obviously restated over and over that he doesn't care.
Sure.
But he's,
I mean, he made a giant case. Yeah. He really went out. And then, you know, the kind of like, oh, thank you. Like, I think Zach loves to be the, you know, you can't hurt us. What, you know, whatever you say makes us stronger. So that kind of like, oh, thank you for pointing out the holes. You know, he was thanking Stab for pointing out the holes in their contribution system and that it's going to be I mean, how in the world are you going to enforce scientific vetting of anything?
No.
Like, are they going to hire people to vet stories? I mean, that's an actual thing that, you know, publishing houses and stuff do
is yeah.
vet stories. And that's
they
not
have multiple people on staff yeah. doing that for a living.
That's not what the industry does.
Well, also, so I was shocked. Well, we got the house dog here at yeah, the Surfrider Foundation.
Vicious.
I was shocked that Zach even responded.
So here's the thing. I think somebody else asked me why I can't remember who it was, but asked why did Zach respond? It's only because Stab is bigger than the inertia. So when I met Zach, in Laguna, you know, after I had made fun of the inertia for a good 3 years at that point, or maybe even 5 years, you know, Zach came up to me with just the tightest smile and tried to be friendly. You know, you know, to his credit, he's great in terms of being friendly. Like, I mean, you could see the rage inside of him, but he keeps it fairly, you know, the exterior is still smiling. He refused to take a picture with me, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. Cause, well, come on, we got to document
yeah.
this. He's like, absolutely not. But so I kept saying, why don't you engage? Like, it would be way funnier and more fun if we could go back and forth. Right. And his whole thing was, why would we? We're bigger than you. And my argument to him was like, who cares about big, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is about fun. It's not, none of us are big, right? The entire surf media, Stab and the Inertia and all of them are tiny drop. They're as big as Beach Grit, basically. I mean, sure, they may have a couple hundred thousand more people than Beach Grit or even 100,000 more people than Beach Grit. But in the larger scale, you know, internet writ large, we're all micro, tiny little things.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, it's not about big, it's about having fun, right? So that's why, though, he responded to Stab, is because Stab is bigger than them. And so I think he thinks they can somehow get, I don't know, traction. There's value in going fighting up, I guess, in him, and maybe no value maybe. In fighting down. But to me, he just comes across looking like, you know, I mean, pathetic, I think, is a nice word to describe how he came yeah. across.
Sorry about that. I guess what I'm confused is, in my view, and maybe my view is different than the rest of the internet, the Inertia is not even doing anything similar to what Stab is doing or what you're doing or what I'm doing. So I'm just like, you guys are pandering to a completely different audience.
But I think that's part of the problem. I think now Stab and the Inertia are similar, right?
Okay.
I think they're kind of merging voice a little bit. I think maybe that is why, you know, their surf voice, I think, is semi-similar, even though Stab, I'm sure, would totally disagree. But I think it really is. I think
yeah.
you have kind of a eclectic, we'll call them, you know, group of riders who aren't necessarily maybe the greatest, who are, you know, doing this thing. And I think that's what they're both, I think they're both in the same pool now. And maybe that's why Zach was like, hey, you know, you're our direct competition now.
Maybe so. I don't view them as this. I mean, to me, the Inertia, I gave up on the Inertia a long time ago in terms of like providing surf related content. I don't even go, haven't even clicked on their site in a very long time.
But I mean, Stab is getting almost, I think Stab is getting almost as bad. Stab's just one advertorial after another these days, like a real bald faced, ugly advertorial where I can't imagine that they're, you know, they're the people paying for it think, oh yeah, that's awesome. Like when you're having to, you know, take off the comments or disable the comments
right.
for basically every advertorial you're doing, to me, it doesn't that say something about the quality of your work? I mean, if you're worried that people are going to come on and just destroy it, which they will because it sucks. And so, you're not solving the problem. It sucks. So yeah. disabling the comments doesn't make the content any better. And
right.
people just go off other places and make fun of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that gives other outlets, your outlet, my sure. outlet, a great platform to take those people, you know, or not to take those people, provide a home for them to communicate.
And it's hilarious to me. It's absolutely hilarious. Again, I don't think I see that you can get sued over your comments and things like that. You know, I get that, but that's not the worry. That's not why Stab's disabling comments. I don't think you should ever disable comments.
Like, they're disabling it because they're worried people are going to talk crap about the Oakley sunglasses.
Sure, but yeah. don't like make a better story
yeah.
about the Oakley sunglasses then that people won't talk crap about.
Right.
I mean, there's a way to do it. There's a way. Like, my beef is not. Advertorial is great. I love it. You know, I think it's fantastic. I think there's products out there that as a surfer, I want to know about, right? Like, I want to know about wetsuits. I want to know about boards. I want to know about if Oakley has a new lens technology, then that's totally fine. But you know, the, I mean, Stab's bad vertorial of like trying to package it in a cute way or like a, it's just really, really not good. And I mean, Oakley should be furious. I would be furious if I was Oakley. And that's what was dribbling out over there.
Yeah. I appreciated bad vertorial, by the way.
Yeah, you like that?
That's solid.
I was proud about it.
It's pretty solid. Yeah. I mean, was that a complete original?
I didn't read it anywhere. Somebody had to have come up with it before me.
It could have been. We got to maybe add it to like the Urban Dictionary.
Yeah.
With your name attached to it.
Yeah, I would. Yeah,
a real feather in your cap.
I had never read it anywhere else. So,
not to belabor Zach Weisberg. However, his letter is really worth picking apart.
I want to do like, I wish I could do it every day on Beach Grit. Just put his letter up.
Yeah.
It starts the day every day with Zach's.
You know what would happen?
A reading from Zach.
I'm gonna predict what would happen there. It's hilarious at first.
Yeah.
On about day 14, no, maybe day 8, people are just going to start chastising you. Like, dude, sure. You're just trying to generate, reuse the same content over and over, regurgitate. But by day 20,
it comes back.
It's going to be hilarious.
100%.
It's going to be like, so day 365, we're going to be rolling laughing.
It's one of the only, one of the very few talents I have as a writer is being able to play through a bad joke long enough where it becomes funny again.
Good.
Of like taking the lumps in the middle of people saying, get off this already. Like,
yeah.
Stop doing this, and just keeping on just like a
perfect,
real dull instrument.
I'm in, dude.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Okay.
I'll make fun of you during that mid-section.
Okay.
but what I did want to say about Zach is, you said it's fun. Like, you pulled it into the gutter, things into the gutter, and then it's fun in the gutter. What I was shocked by in that letter is that Zach doesn't realize nobody's really taking this seriously. The thing that Stab did you is a joke.
Sure.
The readers know it's a joke. We all think it's a joke. You should be able to laugh about it. I'm shocked that Zach at this point still is like, not laughing.
Well, I mean, it's the only, and I think at the end, it's the reason the inertia is a joke, because it doesn't get it. Like,
it's not in on its own joke.
It's not in on yeah. even surfing being a joke, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That what we do is so not serious. And of course, we can have serious conversations about it. And of course, it's super fun and whatever. But again, I mean, I can never get away from the fact that we're in pantsuits, you know, sitting in the water, dancing on the waves. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's what it is. And to think that that's more than it is. And again, Zach and their, you know, they somehow think they're changing the world, I guess, or whatever, like in his scree, just talking about their community, you know, that they're the bright eyed ones who are, you know, well, you know, whoever is in the back of the bus making fun, the cool kids, they're the ones who are earnest and, you know, bright eyed and happy. And I'm like, we're all fucking retarded. We're
yeah.
all on the short bus together here.
And now, like, that's making you the bully by
yeah.
shaming us for doing what we're doing. You know, like, it's hypocrisy.
Completely.
Well, so I didn't tell you this, but I've had a number of emails about you. Or no, the first one that came through a while ago was like, you know, Chaz just is relentlessly making fun of Zach all the time. And it really is poor taste. Like, Zach, it's just like Chaz is bullying Zach. And my response to him was like, no, I mean, I don't view it as bullying because it's all in fun. It's all in jest. Like, nobody actually cares. I don't think Zach actually cares. And now I'm kind of reading it going, oh, I think Zach might actually
Zach
care.
Zach actually cares, but that's Zach's problem, right? And
maybe
so.
I'm going to
keep, like the dull instrument that I am, I'm going to keep hammering him until he doesn't care anymore. Like, or just gets
yeah.
out of the game entirely. Like, if you take yourself seriously
that's
in here,
the thing.
Then you don't belong.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's what surfing is. Surfing is a silly, 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 very fun thing.
Well, so what I was, the other thing I alluded to was I've gotten emails about you, specifically when you talked about kicking a dog.
Oh, yeah.
And a bunch of people emailed me like, how dare he? F you guys, I'm never listening. I'm
yeah.
telling you, I got 10 emails from people
yeah.
saying, I'm never listening again. And some of them I replied to, some of them I didn't. But my response was like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, you think first of all, I don't think Chaz ever kicked a dog. I didn't ask him, but because I don't think he has.
I've kicked a good many dogs.
All right, here they come again.
Yeah.
So, and I'm like, first of all, he cares about his loafers too much to actually kick the dog. You know what I mean? And then, so I'm like, none of this is serious. Like, Chaz's greatest hope is that the inertia or Stab or somebody writes an article saying, Chaz kicks dogs.
Yep.
And then we get more listens on the podcast. People click over to Beach Grit. Like, that's all of it is. It's just a game. Not to pull back the curtain, but nobody actually cares, dude.
Well,
and I'm glad that you guys are listening, and I'm not minimizing your job as the listener, like devaluing what we're doing, but it's all in jest,
dude. All fun.
We're just riding waves. Well, see, it's all a joke.
Well, and that's the thing, too. At the end, you know, like, when Stab, because it was such a well-played joke. I totally agree. Like, Brendan Buckley hit it out of the park on the joke. And that's why at the end when Stab put the disclaimer on Editor's Note, we don't usually like to make fun of our competition. I'm like, come on.
Don't soft pedal it.
Don't soft pedal anything. Yeah. Just like you are. And to post something and then to soft pedal it is the worst thing ever. Is one thing in my life that I hate worse than anything is a pulled punch.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to punch, punch. If you're not. But don't fucking pull your punch. Just punch. Like, and they had a wonderful, funny, very well played prank that they should have just let stand. They totally inertia it out at the end. Stab inertia it out by saying, not all our contributor, you know, this not all our contributors' views. I busted Zach on that too when I met him. I was like, because Zach loves to push their contributors under the bus. Like, if somebody gets something wrong, Zach will passive aggressively push it off onto, like, well, we didn't, you know, this was poorly vetted or whatever. Like, if you put it up on your damn site, then just take responsibility
for it. Stand
behind it. Yeah, stand behind it. Even if it's wrong, just stand behind it till the end.
So I wonder if it's time maybe that he distances himself as the figurehead of the brand.
Oh, I mean, he should. Or just hire somebody, who's able to... Because the inertia would be great. I totally understand its place in our world, right?
Of course.
It's for kooks. And there's a bunch of kooks. Like, I was yesterday or 2 days ago surfing near... wherever I was, Cardiff, somewhere. Okay. And there was some guy, there's two guys on, what are those boards that are like press board, like fake, the fakest Tough Light epoxy one? I guess just Tough Light.
The Tough Light Surf Tech.
Yeah, Surf Tech. Yeah. Okay. So he was on a Surf Tech egg. Might've been Devin Howard, but I know it wasn't Devin because this guy was paddling on the back. He was laying on the back quarter half, you know, of the board. Nose was sticking in the air. It was probably a 7-footer. He wasn't able to catch waves, and he was yelling at his buddy, like, I don't know what's happening. I'm doing everything right. And I just get this damn board. I was like, yeah, your board sucks, but you're not doing anything right. And when I see guys like that, I know, this guy, he loves surfing, clearly. I mean, he's awful, but he loves it. And that the inertia is the place for him, right?
Yeah.
And there's more kooks, like... more, you know, totally just people who are awful at surfing than there are people who are even halfway good, right? And the inertia is for them. But if the inertia could understand, we're kooks and that's funny and you can make fun of us and that's funny and we're going to make fun of ourselves too and that's going to be funny, then it would work.
Or you don't even have to make fun of yourself, but just don't be shocked when the core of the industry pokes fun.
Well, and that's the thing, though. Thinking that, like, Zach's the impassioned, we're the bright-eyed ones, right? We're the ones who are not, you know, wasting our time. We're actually changing the world. That was the meat of his speech was that, you know, we're creating, and you guys are just tearing down. And I was like, what the fuck are you creating? You're creating a, like, this, I mean, he clearly thinks there's value in the inertia community somehow. There's no value there. I mean, there's value. The only value there is if people are having an enjoyable time together, then there's value there. But I don't think they are. There's no like comments on the inertia. There's, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a very engaged readership there. Maybe their, you know, contributors are engaged, but
Yeah.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's LinkedInJobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The whole thing was super confusing to me. I was shocked at how Zach's earnestness in the whole exchange.
I think he genuinely believes that he's changing the world, that the inertia is changing the world for good.
It's amazing.
It's a beacon.
It's amazing. Beach Grit's partnered with Surfer Mag.
Yeah.
That's married. Another thing. Talking about turmoil in the surf media, that was a marriage I did not see coming.
Yeah. It's good.
Tell me
it's
about
a good
it.
One.
What's the deal? Why do it? And what's the benefit for both parties? What was the objective?
You know, I think Surfer is unique. Its position in surf media is unique. And just that it's the, excuse me, the oldest surf magazine, you know, the first surf magazine, it is in surf magazines. It's the icon, right? Or in surf media, there's one icon and it's Surfer. And I had poked fun at Todd Perdanovich, Surfer's editor, you know, a number of times, I think. And at some point I was going to do another story and I was like, wait a second. Most of the people I poke fun at, I've actually met. I mean, I think almost all of them I've met. Rarely do I go half, I mean, I guess not always, but rarely will I go half cock, or I'm sorry. Don't need to walk that back. I'm always half cocked. But with Todd, like, I felt like I was really hitting him pretty hard, but I never met him. So I reached out. And said, hey, you know, I'd love to buy you a drink. And he responded. And I couldn't believe that he responded, you know, firstly, because I went pretty hard at Todd. Like, it wasn't gentle slaps. Like, I was hitting him on his spinelessness and things like that, which is pretty rude. But he agreed to have a drink. So we had a drink. And he was really funny. Like, I was, you know, he was upset at what I had written.
Was he really?
Yeah. Hmm. But voiced, you know, we had a conversation about, you know, why I do what I do and why he was upset, you know, which I totally understood, but, it was just a good conversation, right? It was an honest conversation. And then we met again for drinks. And second time he is one of the funniest men. He's like quietly one of the driest, funniest men I know now. Mm. And so I just thought it'd be really fun, right? Like, Surfer's great at some things and not great at, you know, kind of getting in the gutter, you know, it's a highbrow thing, but wouldn't it be fun if there would be a way for Surfer to come, you know, play in the gossip and the stuff that's not so serious, because there's no real place on Surfer for that. Right. So I was like, well, it'd be perfect for Beach Grit to slide in here, you know, and for us to just do a little bit of content sharing, you know, like, So it was just a real simple, I saw Surfer have a need that we could fill. And then, you know, our audience is a fraction of what Surfer's is. So it opens up surfers who may never have heard of Beach Grit to what Beach Grit is. So to me, it was a marriage that made total sense.
Yeah.
And hats off to Todd Perdanovich for, being able to, look me in the eye, both say his piece, but then also, you know, see the value in it too. Like, I can't speak highly enough of him.
Good. I like it. I think it makes a lot of sense, and the way you explained it makes sense. Like, you, Beach Grit benefits from a huge audience that they have, and like a legitimacy, let's say, that they have, a legacy that you can't buy your way into. And then at the same time, Surfer is missing the boat on a lot of conversations, and it's because they have to maintain a certain,
it's Surfer,
you know, a certain kind of ethos with the brand. And so rather than trying to create a brand new sub-brand that goes and plays in the gossip arena, it's like, oh no, we'll just bring you under our wing once a week or whatever it is. What is the structure for how you guys are
working? Once a week now. My goal is to get a bit more. My real goal is scorched earth, where I take out all of Surf Media. And at the end, the only Surf Media that exists is Surfer and Beach Grit.
All right. Do you want to lay out the plan right here?
I mean, I can. That's okay. It. Like, okay. It's as simple as...
So you're going to infiltrate Surfer from the inside?
No, because I won't... Surfer's fine. Surfer, I don't want to be Surfer.
Okay.
I want to be Beach Grit. And I don't want to take Surfer out. I think Surfer is super valuable as it is. I just want to take Stab out, and the inertia doesn't matter. I just want to take Stab out.
Got it. So yeah. Scorched earth, but directly headed towards the direction of Stab.
Directly headed toward Venice adjacent. And if the inertia accidentally gets burned in the fire that ensues, then so be it.
Well, Stab, that officially officially fired across the bow. Official.
I mean, I feel like, you know, when Stab went and hired every ex Beach Grit rider, I think they knew what they were going to get into.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, list them. Mikey, Rory.
Rory. Ashton was at Beach Grit before he was a Surfer.
Yeah.
Who else? They've had who else have they had? They've had one more. Oh, they went and had way back in the day. Oh, I can't remember his name. He was awesome. He wrote for us way first. But yeah, I mean, Mikey and Rory was basically our staff for the past couple of years, and now they're at Stab.
Yeah. All right, man. Did the WSL buckle after you didn't cover them their final day in
they
France?
They did. They totally buckled.
Did they?
Yeah, they realized the error of their way, and yeah, I received an apology letter from their new CEO. No, I totally forgot, actually. We weren't supposed to cover it. And I posted Long Tom, Steve Shearer's story, and it was just like, oh, it's such a great story. And then somebody emailed me and said, wait, isn't it a blackout? And then
what are you going to do?
You win some, you lose some. Yeah, being a labor
I forgot
organizer.
About that. How convenient. So, dude, I came across this realization. We've had conversations in the past about white wetsuits.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if you wear a white wetsuit, you obviously can rip.
Sure.
And you become a superhero.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where you would buy a white wetsuit.
Well,
and
I've never seen one on the rack.
Of course not. So that's the thing about it. It's like you almost have to just earn your way up to a certain level of ripping, and then you wake up in the morning and there's a white wetsuit laid out on the floor, yep. And then you then don don it, and there are only two people are Kelly Slater and Chloe Andino,
yep.
Obviously.
And then,
would be the third.
Yeah.
But once you wear it, you can suddenly do full rotation airs, like get barreled everywhere.
Sure.
Like it's pretty amazing.
You're the best.
Yeah, obviously. And we also, so white wetsuits were one of those things. Blonde hair is definitely going to up your ripping quotient,
yep.
Because we've got from Steph Gilmore to Owen Wright to John Florence, there's just a long list. So I've discovered another thing that ups your ripping quotient.
Invisalign.
No.
What?
Miggy Poopa? No. Patchy facial hair.
Oh, yeah. You're exactly right. But wait a second. I have patchy facial hair. I can't grow right here.
But you then trim it so that people can't really see it.
I mean, I shave usually.
Exactly. So my point is you have to grow it out.
Okay, so
has to be patchy facial hair that's, I'm going to say, 2 inches
off your
face.
What is the deal with John John's?
It's disgusting.
But does he think it looks good? Or is he just, does it help him rip?
So, well.
Maybe you're onto something.
That's what I'm thinking. Is they looked at the NHL, they looked at baseball, and they're like, oh, these guys who aren't shaving, and they have these like idiosyncrasies, not washing their socks during playoff season or whatever it is that you hear about. And so I think John just goes, dude, I won a world title. I can't shave this pube hair on my chin.
Well, that makes me really like it, because I was real confused about it for a long time.
I mean, I have been
until this minute right now.
Yeah.
It's exactly right.
Look at Felipe.
Yeah.
Have you seen him lately?
Philippe is patchy. Like Philippe, I grow a Philippe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
It's awful.
John John's is weird because it's just two strings off of his chin.
Yeah. He's like a 108-year-old Chinese man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that guy oftentimes only has like one hair.
Yeah, John John's got two.
John John's got one coming off, almost like horns off of his chin. And then Felipe's, on the other hand, it's a full beard. Like it goes on his cheeks and his jawline, but it's still patchy and it's scraggly looking. John John's is the weirdest growth ever.
You're exactly right. It's got to be related to I won, and so I'm not going to shave until I until I don't win anymore.
I think that's what it is. Unfortunately for the women's side of the tour, they don't have this magic power. Yeah. You know, they got to find their own probably if they really want to start dominating. I was thinking though, like in the NHL, those guys can grow legitimate beards.
Sure.
Like
baseball
lumberjacks,
too.
Like baseball too.
Rarely do you see a baseball player with a scraggly beard.
It's not that patchy.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if part of the reason why our sports isn't considered legitimate by other sports is because of the patchiness.
We can't grow beards.
Yeah.
When, besides Jerry Lopez as Vince in the North Shore, when was the last surfer who had a good beard? Like a good, solid beard? Who was like a good, you know, on tour or whatever?
Great question.
There's got to be one, right?
Let's consult Warshaw.
Dino grows a like a thin one on his jawline, but I don't know if he had that when he was competing.
Keith Malloy.
Keith Malloy, you're right.
But not when he was on tour.
No, that's exactly right.
He's currently got a pretty amazing one.
Of course. But what I would like to see, though, is like Vince in the North Shore, like a trimmed beard, right?
Right.
Like a full beard, but that's not gone, you know.
Groomed.
Malloy's is incredible, but like clearly in the hipster vein, right? I mean, his is a thing. I would like to see I think Parco might look good with just a beard, right?
Yeah.
I'm a man now.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, up there in age, and I have a beard. Like, yeah. I trim it, but it's
like
a beard.
It. Yeah, somebody needs to bring a proper beard to the tour.
Like a normal beard, not a hipster beard, not a fashion beard.
I'm just a
man beard.
I think Adriano could do it.
You think so? You think he can grow facial hair?
I think he could. Shane Beshen, but his was always patchy.
Yeah, his was
and
way
his
patchy.
Was like a neck beard.
Yep. He had a
like
patchy
an Abe Lincoln neck beard.
You're exactly right.
So
I wonder if Dane could grow a beard. Dane probably can. That's why he named his thing the neckbeard, his board.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Forgot about that. Bizarre, right?
Yeah, it's really true. That's why surfing will never be a legitimate sport until somebody. So somebody's got to take the fall and grow a proper beard.
Yeah.
And then the WSL should force somebody. The WSL should pick.
If they were smart, they would.
Yeah, who grows the best beard here and then make them grow it.
I feel like Kelly set the gold standard for diplomacy as like a representative of our sport. And like John is really jeopardizing that legacy. Like John, he just looks silly.
Yeah.
And if it is like his Samson power, then I kind of get that. But we're not going to be taken seriously by the outside world with this guy with this weird patchy facial hair.
100%.
It's like just impossible.
Because when John wins, when he wins at Pipe, he'll be on SportsCenter. I mean, they throw usually like a bone to the WSL for the championship. And it'll be John with his... with his Chinaman.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Nobody can take us seriously.
No.
So I think, you know how often, maybe not for you, but with a lot of relationships, the wife is really responsible for making sure the husband doesn't leave the house dressed like an idiot.
Yep.
You know, like, dude, why are your socks pulled up to your knees, weirdo?
Yeah.
Why did you put that fanny pack on? Why'd you tuck your shirt in? Things like that. John doesn't have a wife, so it's understandable, but I feel like maybe this is incumbent upon Ross Williams.
Yeah, I think so too. Because Ross has been looking extra clean lately.
Totally.
Too. Ross seems like he really cares about what he puts on when he goes and sits in the competitors area.
He's well-groomed.
Yep.
Well-groomed, well-dressed.
Yep.
I feel like Ross, it's your responsibility to make sure John gets his act together before he takes that.
But I feel, though, you're exactly right, that it is a Samson power. And there's no way. It's just...
What if he wins the title at Pipe, and then before he actually gets the trophy, goes back and just trims real quick?
I mean, at this point, when he wins at Pipe, that's the problem, is we can't have him shaved, because I'm curious how many John can win in a row.
Yeah. So you think he's winning it this year?
I mean, for sure, right? Everybody else is too. Like, I think the scenarios that the WSL tries to put out to make for compelling viewing are just artificial, right? I mean,
well, they're mathematically correct.
Sure, but it's like what has to happen? John has to lose basically in round two, right?
I'm gonna give you the scenarios, and then I did some additional math.
Okay.
And then we'll discuss. If John finishes first or second at Pipe, he will clinch the title.
Yeah.
Okay. If he finishes third, Medina needs to get first.
Okay.
If John finishes fifth, Medina still needs first. If John finishes ninth, Medina needs a second. Jordy needs a first. If John finishes 13th or 20th, or 25th rather, then Medina needs a fifth. Jordy needs a second. And Julian Wilson, if he wins the event in that scenario, can win the world title. So basically, John needs to not make the quarterfinals.
Yep.
And even if he doesn't make the quarters or makes the quarters and loses there, Medina needs to win the event.
Has Medina won the Pipeline Masters before?
No. So here's the stats. Since they've been on tour, John John's gotten 5th, 9th, 5th, 2nd, 13th, and 5th. Gabriel's got 3rd, 2nd, 2nd, 13th, 9th, and 9th.
Okay, so they're in the, I mean, they're both in the wheelhouse.
Well, when you average those numbers out, John John's averages to a 6.5, Gabe's averages to a 6.33.
Wow.
So they're neck and neck.
Sure.
But what makes it additionally compelling, I think, is that John John hasn't made the quarters only once since 2013. So we're almost guaranteed for John John to make the quarters.
I mean, John John would have to have such a shocker. That's the thing, which is, again, and hearing those numbers makes me happy because it does seem, when you put the numbers out, it does seem like there's a probable chance for it to at least go kind of down to the wire. But I just have a really hard time, you know, but I guess freaky things happen. John John could the waves could be weird. John John could get hurt. I mean, if John John gets hurt though, that's the thing. If John John gets hurt, and Medina wins, then Medina, I think it would have to be fully asterisked.
Yeah, that's a good point. And geez Louise, anything could happen. They could get hurt. It'd be terrible if they did. I just think John John is almost certain to make the quarters.
Yep.
You know, that's almost a given.
And if John John makes the quarters, it's done, right?
Gabe would need to win the event if John John loses in the quarters.
Okay. Okay. So John John would need to
make
the quarters.
But Gabe's never won the event.
Yeah.
He made the finals twice in a row. Last year he didn't. But
what is the pipe specialist thing? It's totally changed now, right? There's only like two or three wild cards.
I don't know.
Yeah, because remember they do the whole...
They do a trials event.
They do the trials, which is basically, hey, wild cards, you get this is your thing. Because remember they used to let like 10 or 12 pipe, which that's what threw it all off. So now I think there's only two wild
cards. Last year there was two.
Yeah.
There was that 16-year-old kid on Billabong, I forget his name, and Gavin Beshin last year.
Yeah.
So I what is your scenario? Who do you think wins this event, and who do you think wins the world title?
I think John John wins the world title. I think, who am I going to go with to win pipe? You know, I'm going to go with the Little Plumber again. I think Adriano de Souza is going to swoop in and win the event.
The Little Plumber.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
Yeah. He's going to win pipe.
I mean, last year it was bizarre. Michelle Borez won the event and Canoa was in the final with him. So it's like always something weird could happen. So here's my prediction, okay? And without knowing the forecast this far in advance, we both are entitled to change our opinion once that forecast gets set. I think John John loses in the quarters.
Yep.
I think Gabriel makes the final. And then we're all wondering, like, if Gabriel wins the final, he wins the world title. Yeah. I think he loses in the final.
To Julian.
To Josh Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
To Josh Kerr.
I could see that.
I think Josh... Obviously, the guy shreds and like he's made the final at pipe before, or maybe it was the semis, but he obviously surfs big barrels really well, but he's been so off his game for so long. He announced his retirement in Portugal and he actually did pretty well in Portugal.
He surfed well.
And I feel like now he can relinquish all the pressure that he's felt all along because he announced his retirement. He knows this is going to be the last Pipe Masters he ever surfs in. He can surf it whether it's overhead or tiny, like he's great in all conditions. And so I think that this will be his swan song. The first CT event that he wins, it'll be a Pipe Masters, and it'll spoil Gabriel Medina's world title.
I love it. I totally love it. That's art.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, that's really, really good.
And he's not sponsored. So it's like...
Did Rusty draw... when?
A year ago.
Okay. So he's been sponsorless all... I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
He's been sponsorless all tour.
Well, that could be an indicator for why he's done poorly this year is he's been riding a bunch of different boards. He's actually written a few albums competition. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he's been riding all sorts of boards in competition, mayhems, and never really sorted it out and sussed it out.
Okay.
But my money's on Josh Kerr to win the whole event.
Riding what board?
Good question.
Riding.
I think he's going to ride locally shaped boards.
And
Arakawa's or something like that.
That's a good call.
So that's where my money's on.
Wow. I would really love for it to be classic pipe, like at least, you know, for a chunk of the event. I mean, how good would it be if it's just like firing big barrel pipe?
Yeah. Ooh. In which case, John John and Gabriel will do very, very well.
Yeah.
You know? But again, Gabe's going to lose second. So, the Piahi challenge might take place today or tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Isn't it on for tomorrow?
They greenlit it.
I thought it meant when it was greenlit, it meant it was on for Saturday. Or...
But they could always call it off even when it's greenlit, sure. You know?
Yeah, but so it could. I didn't know that there was a possibility that it could go today.
That's what I originally thought. I don't pay that close of attention.
Sure. Do you care?
Well, that's my exact question was, how little do you care is the better question.
Okay, if I go home from here and Jaws is running, I would go surfing instead of watching it.
Yeah.
Like, or I would, if I was home, like the scenarios, like the world title scenarios, the scenarios that would get me to watch
this is a good game.
The Piahi challenge, I'd have to be home because I'm definitely not going to pull it up on my phone. I'd have to be in front of my computer.
Okay.
Like this. So there's no scenario where I would pull Piahi up on my phone and watch it on the app. So I got to be home. I definitely have to have alcohol. And I have to be two drinks in. And then I would be like kind of boozy enough to be like, oh, let's check that out.
So World Series is taking place right now. The baseball World Series. Yep. Stranger Things 2 is getting released on Netflix today.
Did you watch Stranger Things 1? Dude, I missed one.
I'm trying to get through season 1 currently because knowing season 2 is coming and everybody loves it and talks about it. I'm not into it, dude. I'm 5 episodes in and I'm like pulling teeth to get me to finish it.
Yeah, I my wife watched it without me. It was one of those where I was probably falling asleep early like I usually do, and I missed it and don't care at all.
Right. So that's kind of – but so Piahi, it's like, well, there's these other conflicting social events taking place on television. Yep. Where do I spend my time? Will you then watch once after the event's over and they put out a highlights package, will you click play on that?
No.
Okay. See, I definitely will click play on
that. Yeah. I'll only click play on it if something like incredible happened. And not to take away anything from Jaws or the people who surf it. I think it's obviously it's like superhuman. But the only big wave that really interests me, oddly, is Waimea. Like I love watching the eddy.
Yeah.
I really genuinely enjoy watching the eddy. The rest of them, it's just, you know, I have no like association to it. I don't feel anything when I see it. It's just a thing. It's another thing. And I don't watch hockey or NASCAR either.
Right. So I am interested to watch it. I actually really enjoyed the event last year. Shane Dorian's couple of drops that he had, like one before the event, and I think one was in the heat.
Didn't Kyle Lenny have a couple
good,
interesting drops too?
Yeah. And Aldi. Billy Kemper's barrels. Yep. Like those are all incredible waves. But watching it live is painful because the lulls are so long.
Yep.
You know, there's elements of it that just make it less interesting. But the highlights package I'm always very interested in. I agree with you. Waimea last year was super compelling because it was just water world. It was a complete chaos.
And the way the scoring, I don't know how they score. I can't remember how they score Jaws. But the eddy is scored differently, right?
100-point scale, I think.
And I really like the way the eddy is scored somehow makes it compelling to me.
Yeah.
Like it feels like the guys, everybody has a shot always.
It's a spectacle. The other thing is Jaws is perfect.
Yeah.
So like watching guys just do the same thing over and over isn't as interesting. Whereas the eddy at Waimea, Mason Ho getting bucked off a wave and like John making this, like it's all, there's the element of not knowing what's coming next is super, super interesting.
And I was there on the cliff when the year that Andy took one in, like caught one, pumped all the way through the middle section, like the wave stayed just big enough, you know, and got in the shore break and just packed the clothes out.
Andy or Bruce?
Bruce had done it before, but Andy did it. Andy did it, you know, also that one year, unless my memory is totally gone. I have the clearest picture of just watching though Andy pump his board across the bay, like where the wave kind of dies down, to get it all the way back into the shore break. And it's just like, there's no, Jaws doesn't have that. Jaws doesn't have a shore break, right? So even the fact that there's a shore break at Waimea makes it a fun thing.
And by the way, how gnarly is it? Like when you watch it on camera, it's gnarly, but when you're there in person, it's seeing
incredible.
The power of the ocean and that, how gnarly that shore break is, Andy and Bruce are the men.
To pack it on a 9-foot or 10-foot or whatever their guns are, like to go in with a 10-foot fiberglass spear into a shore break like that is like, Yeah, incredible.
And the shore break is 10 feet and 13 feet wide.
Yeah.
And the lip is 4 feet thick. It's so
incredible.
So manly.
Yeah.
You know?
There's something about the way that I think that at Jaws and Nazare and stuff too, like, I don't like watching these guys in their life vests for some reason. Like, I really like, there's something about the real stripped down, the Waimea gun, mm-hmm. which is a specific kind of board, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys out there just in their, either nothing or their contest singlets. There's something about like the super bulked up look of Jaws. And of course I appreciate the safety and all that, but it just looks weird to me. Like it's nothing I'd want to do. Like in some weird bizarro land, I would love to be able to surf Waimea. In no anywhere would I ever care to surf Jaws.
Right. Well, the Waimea thing is almost more relatable. I think like we've all been humbled by paddling out at the big day at our local break.
Sure.
And Waimea has some of that. I remember an instance 2 years ago, I think it was massive. Like the bay was closed out and Kelly and Ross were on the beach and they tried to paddle out and they couldn't make the paddle out. But Luke Shepherdson, who was like 18-year-old North Shore kid with no sponsors, they all paddled out at the same time. Luke made it out, and then Kelly and Ross got washed back to the beach, turned around and saw him on a sick wave.
That's amazing.
And that's so amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's an element of like that being humbledness that the ocean is greater than all of us.
Totally.
And it will always humble you. And but then the local kid who's kind of done it more than anybody might make his way through somehow and then be the hero that day.
And that's what it feels like. Just the paddle part of Waimea and stuff, you know, like Jaws.
Yeah.
I mean, not that they're getting towed into Jaws for the event, but the fact that there's skis out there and everybody,
yeah.
you know, people are getting saved from the soup and all that. Like there's just something about it feels like anyone could win
mm-hmm.
Waimea.
Yeah.
You know, where, yeah.
Which unfortunately won't run this year.
I know. Unfortunately, it's a real bummer.
The other thing about the Piahi event, it's unsponsored.
Yep.
Which is kind of weird.
Does Maui sponsor it?
No.
It's just nothing.
It just says the Piahi Challenge
yeah.
or whatever. Are they running women's heats this year?
Oh.
I haven't seen any press saying that they are.
Yeah.
And I went on their website. There's no listing of surfers for the women's.
So there's no way to know. I mean, will they do like a specialty like Paige Olmes and whoever else? I mean, the women just got annihilated last year, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking is they wouldn't do it this year, but I haven't heard that they won't, and I haven't seen anything that they are.
That's a good question.
So it's on, by the way. It starts today.
Oh, really?
I just pulled up the website.
What time?
10:30 their time. So
it's on right now. Oh wait, no, not yet.
10:30 their time. An hour and 45 minutes from now.
Yeah.
So by the time listeners hear this, they will know this information.
Fantastic. Hey,
so it looks like it's
go
on.
Watch. I was lying. I was kidding. Is the cam up?
No.
Okay.
No live stream yet.
You know, now that you say it, no, I'm not going to watch it.
The thing is, the waves are good right now at home. So
I know. I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Is if I have a between surfing and watching surfing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, dude, a couple other details before we wrap the show. Julian Wilson and Ashley O are pregnant.
I heard. I read.
In conjunction with Jack Freestone and Alana, also looking to pop
fantastic.
Any day now.
Didn't we talk about here on the show before about forcing the best surfers to couple and have children?
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's actually happening.
Well, I think it's great for the human race and all that sort of thing. My question is, does this baby cuckold, to use Derek's recent, I'm loving that.
Yeah, Derek loves cuckold.
Yeah, so does having a baby cuckold your world title hopes?
Oh, I want to say no.
Really?
With Julian. Because he clearly didn't win one without a baby. So why not throw a baby in the mix?
Like, yeah, but maybe he was on the upward swing.
I don't know. Julian, I wish. Every year I cheer for Julian. And every year I feel...
Most disappointing surfer on tour.
I don't know what it is. Like, he has all the skill in the world and all of the waves in the world. You'd think by now he would understand the competitive, whatever, the part of, you know, priority and all that. But the fact that he can't put it together, so maybe a baby puts it together for him.
Okay. I did not think of that angle. I hope that you're right.
Yeah.
Because I'm rooting for him.
Because he might be, a great thing a baby could do if he's going to be a hands-on dad is it might kind of exhaust him enough where he just doesn't have time to think, you know, so much. Maybe that's his problem, that he's always overthinking it. And so he can just, you know, get 4 hours of sleep. Oh man, I got to go surf my heat. Go out and surf it. Like let his body do what his body can do.
Yeah.
Without overthinking it, right?
Okay.
So I'm going to, Julian, when you listen to this podcast, I encourage you to be a hands-on dad and let it completely exhaust you both mentally and physically, and then go surf.
I think it will exhaust him. I think, but he would be a hands-on dad is what I mean.
So.
Like, I don't think
But I hope he's not like, I hope he's not one of these dads who's like, okay, baby, you got to take, I mean, to the wife, yeah. honey, you got to take over kid duty.
You're the mom. Yeah, I'm the breadwinner.
And I have to prepare for this competition. No, don't
prepare. I don't see him being that way.
Don't prepare for your competitions.
So the other detail is the criticism of his surfing is it's not dirty enough. It's too polished and it makes it look too easy for the judges. So maybe this will just make it more dirty. You know, it's like
a little diaper poo on your board.
Totally.
It's dirty.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, man. I'm excited for Julian.
That's well, fun. I ran some more numbers. I looked at the top 10 basically and I was like, who among the, like, there's more babies on tour now than there's ever been before. You got Parco traveling with his wife and kids. Josh Kerr traveling with his wife and kids. Felipe just had a baby. Miggy Pupo had a baby. Like, there's all these Owen Wright. He's bringing Keita on the tour with his baby. Lots of babies on the tour, right? More than ever. I'm like, what is going on? But then I looked at the top 10.
None of them have babies.
Dude, it's all in the bottom 20 that have the babies.
That's
so John, Gabe, Jordy. Well, Jordy has a wife, but no baby.
Yep.
Julian, baby coming. Owen is in the top 10. That's one exception of the rule. And then Felipe is sitting eighth, and he has a baby. Okay. Other than that, no babies.
Wow. So maybe I'm going to be wrong. But I think with Julian, it's going to work. I really feel.
All right.
I'm pulling for Julian's.
Kelly won all those titles, and he had a kid, technically.
Yeah. I mean, technically.
Technically. So it's not that it can't be done.
No.
I think bringing the baby on tour might be the issue.
But I really believe, though, that with Julian, that's going to be the key.
All right. I hope you're right.
Yeah, me too.
I hope you're right. Until that science comes in, though, I'm suggesting to John, don't make a baby.
Well, he has no worries because he has that chin patch.
That's a good point.
There is. Maybe that's why Ross is having him keep it.
Birth control.
It is full birth control.
Full birth control.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can have all the millions of dollars that you have. Does not matter.
Nope.
Because you got that chin hair.
You got that thing. Yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah. It is really uncomfortable to look at.
So gross.
Yeah.
I look away. I usually shield the bottom of the screen with my hand while I'm looking at it just because I want to like him.
No, of course. He's a likable guy.
Yeah.
Best surfer in the world.
Well, good news is you can't see it from the beach.
Yeah. I don't know. I think at this point it's so ugly that you might be able to.
High def cameras.
Yeah.
You might be able to.
I mean, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a perplexing one.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Closing segment for the show.
I have one quick thing.
Yeah, please.
To bring up that, okay, so I just read this morning, put it on Beach Grit this morning. Pharrell Williams, the singer, songwriter, producer, is doing a wave pool, theoretically, or a whole complex in Virginia Beach that's around, it's going to be around the wave pool. And the wave pool technology they're choosing is wave garden technology, which made me wonder, Kelly's is so much clearly better than wave garden technology. And I put this on Beach Grit this morning, but I'm really curious. Might wave garden win at the end because it's like VHS and Kelly's is beta? Like, beta was better than VHS. Remember in the format wars?
Totally.
And beta lost because, you know, for I think a bunch of weird reasons, but it made me wonder, wow, is wave garden going to be this kind of crappy mush burger at the end going to be the wave pool technology that survives? And if that's true, what does surfing look like? Right.
I did read that article.
Wave burgers. Wave garden is so clearly burgery. It's like night and day between wave garden. And I know they have the Cove coming and everything, but I haven't seen that yet, but it's just night and day between what Kelly's pool does and what that does. Is it just that more people can ride a wave garden wave?
Yes, it is. Okay. So While I like your beta versus VHS analogy, and I coincidentally used that analogy arguing with somebody at dinner a couple of nights ago.
Amazing. Yeah.
Talking about Tesla and like what. But I think there's room for both. So I think that Wave Garden is to the inertia what Kelly's Wave Pool is to Beach Grit.
Okay. I like that.
That's what I think it
is. Okay. So
I think the masses will ride the wave garden and it'll go into.
But okay, how much of these things? The problem is, though, with this, and the problem for this and for Beach Grit is that there's only, like, how much are these things to develop? They're millions of dollars, right?
For sure.
Tens of millions of dollars. Yeah. So who's going to pour tens of millions of dollars into developing something for a super small core, right? That's the problem.
Yeah, well, that's the example of Kelly's wave pool.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying is when developers are going to choose, they're going to say, okay, this is WaveGuard and it's a shitty wave, but you know, you can pack 20 people in there and charge $100 and everybody's happy, right?
Yeah.
Here's Kelly's, you can have four people in there and they have to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Then which developer is going to say, oh yeah, let's go the one where we can make way less money, but just because it's better. I mean,
you don't make way less money. You just
charge way more.
Charge more. So okay. maybe a better analogy is the way that Kelly's wave pool is Surfer's Journal. You got to pay $20 for it,
but
and it only comes out every so often.
But it's a quality.
But it's a really nice publication.
I wonder if Kelly's pool, if those guys will do like a Wave Garden E version, or if that totally destroys the value of Kelly's pool.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think this is kind of tangential, but another model that I discussed with somebody is, what if it's just a country club model?
Yeah.
What if they're just like, hey, you give us $200,000 a year.
And you belong.
Then come.
Yeah.
And then when you come, you still pay $100 an hour.
Yeah.
And we charge you for the drinks and the food
also. Sure. But it's a country club model. Yeah.
You know, that would be interesting. Obviously, that a lot of people would be upset about that. Well, I mean, you know, Kelly signed a deal Palm Beach. They're going to be building a pool.
But it's interesting. That's where Dirk Ziff lives too, right? And so how much of this is like, okay, so Kelly's pools are only going to go in places that either the owner of the WSL live or, you know, I mean, I'll be curious. I'll be very interested to see the first Kelly Wave pool that gets sold or whatever they do to somewhere that's not connected in any way to the WSL, right? So if the development group who chooses to utilize a Kelly Wave pool system as opposed to the Wave Garden system will be a real interesting thing to
And we don't know what the business model is for the wave pool in Palm Beach. It might be the country club model. It might be just selling hours to random people.
And that's the thing, I guess, but there is a business model for the Wave Garden. There's a functioning, money-making one in Wales. I'm assuming the one in Austin is doing fine, right?
Yeah.
So there's an actual model to follow there.
Yeah. And you're right, though. The Palm Beach location is interesting because if they had built it in Cocoa Beach, that would have made...
Sure, Kelly's hometown.
It would have made a lot of sense, and it'd be like, oh, and it's like the median income in Cocoa Beach isn't enough for anybody to be able to support, you know, a country club model there. But Palm Beach, on the other hand, it very much could be the country club model.
100, well, which I'll be real curious. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out as it goes.
Yeah, if the next one is then built in like Silicon Valley, and then the next one's New York City.
Exactly. If Kelly pools only go where huge dollar is, and the Wave Garden goes to the people.
Yeah, Austin, Texas. all right, closing segment for the show, barrel or nah?
Yes.
I need you to weigh in on four topics.
Okay, I'm ready.
Waxing a brand new surfboard.
It's a real pain in the butt.
Totally.
It is such a no barrel.
So nah.
Could somebody make something that would make it easier? Like,
I've thought about just hiring
somebody to wax.
Like a little roadie that travels with me to wax my boards and then scrape the wax off.
Do you like, after you go through the total hassle of waxing it for the first time, do you like the way it feels?
Yes.
You like it better than a board that's been, you know, not a crusty board, but a board that's been served and...
I like fresh wax.
You like how often do you freshly wax?
Like I wax my board every single time I surf, but I don't, it's not like I scrape it.
How often do you strip it and wax it?
I get new boards more frequently than I strip old ones is what ends up happening.
Nice.
But I would say I'll strip it, let's say every 15 sessions to 20 sessions, something like that.
Yeah, it's such a pain. Just the chatter you get, like when it goes and you're like, that vibrates your arm. I hate every part. It's funny.
My arm is exhausted.
I used to, as a kid, when I got a board, because, you know, you wax it once and that's, you wax it once fresh and that's it.
Yeah.
As a kid, I had one board every 3 years if I was lucky. And so then I would like really, you know, I would enjoy it. Now it's like, oh man, I got to wax this stupid thing.
Well, it's funny because you get a brand new board, you're so excited. Yeah. And you would think you'd be excited to waxing's part of the process.
No.
It's the least fun part of the process. Yep. It's completely tedious.
To be honest with you, to be real frank here in this room.
Please do.
I have not surfed brand new boards that I've really been wanting to surf because I knew I was going to have to wax it. And so so I just left it on the rack for, you know, way longer. Like I was frothing to ride it, but the fact that, okay, it's pumping now, I'm just going to go surfing. I don't have time to wax this thing.
That's the thing. You have to plan an extra 20 minutes.
I'll usually what I do, maybe this is what you should do too.
Okay.
I'll wax it at night. When I have, like, I won't wax it before surfing. I'll think, okay, I got 20 minutes now. I just got this new board. I'm probably going to want to surf tomorrow. I'm just going to wax my board.
I've done it in front of the TV at night.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Do you base coat?
Yes, I do. I've got a whole freaking routine mapped out.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the worst.
Would you just scrub it on?
Whatever I have too. Like, so I'll wax with warm water in the middle of winter. I'll wax with cold water in the middle of summer. Like, it's just, I'm the worst with wax. So whatever happens to be, I never buy wax. Or, you know, not like I should. I never buy it. So it's just,
what wax do you use?
Sticky bumps.
Me too.
Yeah. And somehow there's always sticky bumps around. Yeah. I don't know where it comes from because I don't buy it.
Just regenerates, actually. Yeah. In the back of your car, if you leave it there?
It must.
It repopulates.
My wife is a big fresh wax every time. I mean, it's got to be like thick wax. So she's always furious at me. Because if there's no wax, I'll still go surf and just slip a lot and not care.
Do you ever use the foo?
No, I used it once. I hated it.
Too sticky?
Way too sticky. Yeah. It was like all over. I used it in a warm water scenario.
Yeah.
And I was surfing wetsuitless and, you know, just nude top. And just like having that in my chest hair hurt so bad. I was like, this is not worth ever again using this.
Yeah, it's really crazy. I use sticky bumps. My wax technique is rail to rail.
Yeah.
I do like a full lap rail to rail, then a full lap nose to tail.
Oh, wow.
And then a full lap circles.
Okay.
And then so then you get little beads.
See, I just do one real weak circle, just like, I just go big and then to small.
That big circumference circle that you're doing with your hand right now that listeners can't see won't get the fine beads.
No, of course not.
Tight, small concentric circles get you little fine beads.
Man, it almost makes a man want to get full deck traction.
I would never.
I mean,
unless I was able to do full air rotations. Yeah. all right. Barrel or non, number two, neck tattoos.
Oh, so barrel.
Really?
I think the neck tattoo is the greatest. Yeah.
I bring it up not only because you have neck tattoos, but Gabriel Medina, I saw a neck tattoo. His, I think, was in the back of his neck.
Yeah, he had a weird back one.
And I think it might even be his name.
I don't like the, if it's his name, that's a real bummer. And the back of the neck one, if that's his only neck tattoo, is also a bummer because the XXX, Vin Diesel, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
So you really look like XXX. Vin Diesel, if you do that, you have to be real careful about the back. I think the side, you go side neck first, and then you go back if you
is
want.
Is the neck, the back of the neck tattoo to a man, the tramp stamp
I think
to a
so.
Woman?
I feel so.
It might be.
Yeah. And so Gabe Medina has a tramp stamp.
Gabe Medina.
You know, who does have a tramp stamp? Is who's the Brazilian skateboarder who does vert?
Bob Burnquist?
Bob Burnquist has a full-on legitimate tramp stamp.
Like a tribal type design?
All right on his lower back, and that's all he has.
As a joke?
It's not. It's serious.
Dead serious.
A dead serious tramp stamp.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
It's incredible.
All right, so Gabe, neck tattoos in general, barrel, back of the neck, nah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Filing that one away. Punching your board, barrel or nah?
I understand frustration, and I understand frustration in inanimate objects. Like, I get so mad at drawers that don't open properly or whatever. So this one's tough though, because you look like a real goober when you do it. You better be ripping. So if you're, but when Kolohe and Dino does it, it looks nah. So I'm going to say nah. I'm going to say there's never a good time. Describe to me or fill me in on a good board punch.
There isn't one.
Is there? There's. Did
I
no,
would say nah.
Did no? Yeah, I'm saying not too. But did no pro ever make it look good? Did no pro walk up and give us like a good like punch his nose off his board or something? You always look like a fool. You look foolish.
My favorite was Jordy's swing and a miss.
Yeah,
that was so good.
That was what we should. How hard would it be to make a compilation of board punches?
It'd be tough.
Yeah.
One of our like loyal listeners
could do it.
Who has some video editing skills should do that for us.
Because it'd be real fun to have a whole compendium of the greatest board punches in surf history.
I'll tell you what. Let's make a deal with that listener. If that listener does it, will you post it on Reports from Hell and tag them in it?
Oh, 100%.
There you go. You get a free tag. How many people? You got like 60,000 followers? 80,000 followers. So whoever wants to benefit from Chaz's, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Account, and I'll put it on Patreon too.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody sent that one to me as a Barrel or Not listener because I think Felipe punched his board after his heat. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it's Barrel in a heat. But nah, I can't imagine it ever being cool outside of a heat. But even in a heat, I don't think it's acceptable.
No, it's not across the board, I think. And if you're gonna be frustrated and lash out at something, like, I mean, I guess your board is the only thing there, but it'd be just as, like, hit the water or whatever, right? I mean, hitting your board, wouldn't be satisfying to hit the water, but you just look like, you look foolish when you hit your board.
It's also, it feels like such a grotesque waste of, like, you have this free surf, you get free surfboards.
Yeah.
We pay a super high dig, $600-$700 for a brand new shortboard. The rest of the world does to support you who gets them for free.
Yep.
And now you're just wasting it.
What if his board really did perform badly? Say
he's blaming his board.
I mean, what if he just had a bad one, right? Everybody, I've had a bad board before, like that just didn't quite, I mean, I'm sure it was me, but in any case, what if instead of punching, a surfer went up to the shore and just broke their board to pieces, like a musician breaking his guitar, just like shattered it, like bam, stomp on it, break it in half, break the halves in half, like really break it into little pieces.
I
spend a lot of time, like if it's a trestles, throwing cobblestones on it.
It's going to be super fun to watch.
Yeah.
However, my problem with that is there's going to be 15 little local kids watching it going, I would kill to have that surfboard right now.
That's true.
I don't care if it is a dog of a board. I'm just going straight on the whitewash because I'm a kid and I'm just learning how to surf, and I would love that board. And you just demolished it. That's my problem.
But then, okay, what if the said surfer demolished his board and then went up to his quiver, took all of his boards, and gave them to the children?
Back in the good column.
Okay.
I accept that surfer, and I will pat him on the back. All right. So final question, Barrel or Nah. Rubbing sand in your wax to increase the traction.
I do that all the time. Again, not because I think it's cool or Barrel. I just do it because I don't have enough wax on my board. I don't like the way it feels. It feels gritty. I don't know that it even does increase the traction. It just feels like it's something I can do instead of waxing. What do you think about
it? So it's Barrel.
It is Barrel for me because I just do it all the time.
It's super Barrel for me.
Do you use it to actually increase traction?
Every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time without even thinking about it. And you're right. Like, I don't actually know if it does. Yeah. I think it does, actually.
Do you do it even when you're surfing topless? When you're surfing naked top?
Yes.
I do when I'm... And I don't like that because it feels like sandpapery.
Sure. Yeah. But I do it so... Specifically, I get into like shin deep water or so,
and grab a handful.
Get the board wet, you know, so there's a little lubrication on it. Then get a handful of that muddy type whack or sand, and just a couple of laps along the deck, and it just puts a fine layer in it. Doesn't embed it super deep, just a fine layer.
Okay,
that's all you need.
Okay,
so
I like it.
There you go. Lots of board waxing information for listeners in today's show.
It's fantastic.
Hope they're appreciative. They could put that on their Hypto Crypto.
And sticky bumps, feel free to send a box my way.
Yeah. All right, Chaz, where can people get a hold of you?
Beachgrit.com, Reports from Hell on Instagram.
Cool.
And just feel free to email chaz@beachgrit.com.
There you go. And then this episode will obviously be on Beachgrit with a comment section, so everybody chime in. Give us your feedback on whether or not you wax your board with sand. And whether or not you pee in your wetsuit and all the other topics we've discussed in previous episodes.
Give me the over-under for when Stab will finally fall to the mighty hand of Beach Grit.
You know, I said shot across the bow's been fired, but that shot was fired a long time ago. These are now like actual, like, we're going side by side and cannons are firing.
Yeah, it's good.
Better analogy.
That's good.
All right, and then obviously SurfSplendorPodcast.com will have all the images, videos, everything that we discussed in this show, and at SurfSplendor on Instagram, where I try to poke the bear and get the conversations going there too. This is David for Chaz. Until next week, get Barrel.